Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Our friends at Old Fashioned Golf are creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All of their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show off your love for this great state, both on and off the golf course. And take it from me, Rob Hernandez and Gary D'Amato, when we wear our old-fashioned golf polos on the golf course or out to dinner, mine's the red one with the white outline of the state of Wisconsin, no one has to ask us where we're from or where we like playing our golf. It's all about Wisconsin at old-fashioned golf. So check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. I am Rob Hernandez. That is Gary D'Amato. And Gary, we welcome Old Fashioned Golf aboard as a sponsor of Talking.Golf, and had a chance to peruse their website this week and look at some of the things that they have to offer. It's far more than just polos and apparel. Golf towels, ball markers. I love the ball markers. And I love what they've done. You know, I mean, for years, my dad grew up in Chicago, and we'd go back to his roots, and every time we crossed the border and we would see that Welcome to Wisconsin sign, I mean, it's iconic. And the thing is, it's never changed. And now it's on a ball marker from Old Fashioned Golf. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, really glad they came aboard as a sponsor. They make really quality shirts, for sure, polos. I've got one myself, Rob, and I just ordered a head cover for my driver and a mallet putter cover. The real cool, with the numerous Wisconsin logos on it. It's really cool. They make really good stuff. I didn't know until I looked at the website, too, that they make a lot of accessories, golf accessories. But, really quality stuff. I'm happy to wear their polos and definitely welcome them aboard as a sponsor.
Absolutely. The head covers are pretty snazzy. We should also mention, too, a full array of hats.
Yeah.
Gary, in looking at their hats, we play a lot of golf. We play a lot of golf in hot weather. Do you have hats for certain times in the season, and then certain hats where you try, for me, it's trying to hide the sweat stains on a hat. That's to me the mark of a good hat. And I'm looking forward to, I got a black one with the, they call it the Midnight I-43 hat. It's got the license plate design. So a lot of the little, logos that you see on the Wisconsin license plate are incorporated into a black hat, and I just feel black is safe, but black also gets hot. How do you handle your headwear, Gary, as someone like me, maybe thin on the hair, as it were, and in great need of a golf cap?
Well, I'm a lot thinner in the hair department than you are, Rob. I've been wearing our black Wisconsin.Golf hats all summer, and those are really nice hats, and I'm only on my second one. So, and I wear them virtually every day. So they stood up very well. I ordered, I think it's like a gray hat from Old Wisconsin, mm-hmm. Old Fashioned, with the Wisconsin logo, red logo in the middle of it.
Yep.
So I think a dark color is probably better for me. The white ones just, show the sweat stains, right away on a hot day. So looking forward to getting that hat too.
Yeah, that gray cap with the curved brim. It's got the Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin logo with a golf flag right. Looks like right about in Beloit, and then it extends up to Hurley, and that's pretty snazzy. Are you a curved brim guy, or I saw they have a logo hat with their Old Fashioned Golf logo in the flat brim. I know that the flat brim is pretty popular with the young kids. Neither one of us would qualify with that description. I'm not a flat brim guy, but I do have a couple flat brim hats.
I am not a flat brim guy, Rob. I'm the curved bill all the way. So I'm looking forward to getting that hat. Yeah. All my hats, I don't think I have one flat brim hat out of the maybe 75 golf hats that I have. I don't think one of them fits that description. So
when I do, Gary, I tend to curve it anyway. I kind of bend it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And here's a good question, Rob. I don't know it's a fashion thing to leave the little sticker on, the shiny metallic sticker on brims. Why? I don't get that. I take mine off right away.
I'll tell you what, if it stays on, Gary, it's only because I don't see it or I forget to take it off. I certainly take some of the plastic off the top of the brim, but that one under there, under the brim is sometimes the one that stays because I don't see it or I figure, well, do I really want to take this off or not? I'm lucky to take the tags off. I'm always fear that sometime I'll show up to the first tee looking like the mini Pearl of golf with like a tea bag on the side of my hat with all the hat information, because sometimes if I put a new one into operation, it's usually on the fly. So that's a good question though. All these things that we got to think about here with apparel. Yeah. The folks over at Old Fashioned Golf, they'll talk you through whatever you need. And again, ball markers, head covers, towels, hats, and the quarter zips and men's polos, all part of the array of their golf assortment of apparel and other things related to golf. And we'll continue to talk about them here as we go forward on Wisconsin.golf's Talking.golf. It's Solheim Cup weekend. It's not on the docket, so I come at you with a curveball. Did you watch the Solheim Cup?
I watched the opening ceremony yesterday, which was pretty good. I have not seen any of it since then. I played golf this morning myself. They're over in Andalusia, Spain, right?
Correct.
So it's interesting that they're playing, one week apart from the Ryder Cup, and they're both in Europe. I know some of the women on the LPGA Tour were a little disappointed that there wasn't a little more cross-marketing that they could have, really lifted the Solheim Cup. But, I covered the one at Rich Harvest Farms. I don't know, that was maybe 10, 12 years ago. It was one of the best things I covered that year. It was really, really good theater, really fun.
Well, I'll give Golf Channel some credit. They've done a really good job in the run-up to the Solheim Cup this week. They've got a crew on the ground in Spain, and they've got a crew back in the studio talking it and breaking it down. And doing it in a way that, I think is elevating the women's game. Captain Stacey Lewis for the American side put Lexi Thompson in the first match going out. And honestly, on paper, no one struggled more than Lexi Thompson this year. And she just you look at her and maybe saying trying too hard, to be the player that so many people think she can become. She's obviously, as physically gifted as any women's player that's come along in a generation on the American side. And they were pretty critical of her going out in the first match. And she goes out and not only wins that, but they lead a 4-0 American victory in the early session. As so foursomes is the alternate shot, right? And then four ball is the best ball. And so four ball was this afternoon. She got a half a point there. The U.S. tied two matches and lost one close and one kind of handily they lost. And so it's 5-3 after one day, which I think is a huge win on foreign soil for the Americans, especially being as heavy underdogs as they are every year in this event, just because Europe tends to, between Sweden and England, tends to put out a lot of the great players on the LPGA Tour. But it was really cool to see Lexi Thompson play so well. However, if you go to social media, Gary, I think now that the competition's done, they can activate some of the videos that are attached to some of the tweets. She did have a shot on one of the green complexes, just off the green complex, that she was chipping, and it came out sideways. It was a shank. And and then she recovered from the shank in some way, shape, or form. Again, they have the match, but it hit close to home, Gary, because I'm battling with my irons, the rights, as I like to call them.
Yeah, the rights. We don't use the S word. I hit a couple myself in an outing on Monday, Rob. They came out of nowhere. I really hadn't hit a shank all year, and all of a sudden I hit two in a row. And when you do that, it's like, man, it immediately paralyzes you, to hit a shot that does that. But I'm happy for Lexi. I know she's kind of like the pick that was sort of like the Justin Thomas on the men's side, even though Justin hasn't struggled nearly as much as Lexi has. Justin just hasn't had a year up to standards, while Lexi has had a poor year by her standards. So that's heartening that she won her morning match. And so she got a point and a half today?
Point and a half. So the morning, Friday foursomes, saw, Lexi Thompson and Megan King, defeat, Maya Stark and Lynn Grant, 2-1. And then Danielle King and, Andrea Lee, won their match 1-up. Nellie Korda and Allison Corpus, won 1-up. And, Allie Ewing and Cheyenne Knight won 5-4 with Charlie Hull and Emily Pedersen. And that was kind of, I think, the surprise one there. I know that it looked as though to some people on the telecast that Charlie Hull might have been playing, favoring her back and may be battling a back injury. She wasn't in the afternoon session, but it's, and then the U.S., got half a point from Rose Zhang and Megan Kang. I thought that should have been the opening one. I mean, Rose Zhang, you know, the number one golfer in the world, you know, for so long, coming out of Stanford rookie season. She's going to play in a lot of Solheim Cups, and they sat her in the first one. That was kind of, I think caught a lot of people by surprise. But they got a half in their match, and then so did Jennifer Kupchow and Allison Corpus. And Allison Corpus, I think, is kind of maybe a underrated American player. I mean, she's won a major, I think, this year. It might have been the U.S. Women's Open. Is that right?
Yep.
And so, you know, they tied Emily Pedersen and Maya Stark. Lexi Thompson got 1 point in the morning. She and Lilia Vu, lost to, Leona Maguire and Georgia Hall in the afternoon. I thought Lexi was out in that first match in the afternoon that got tied, and she wasn't. So they lost 1-up, and then, Angel Yin and Allie Ewing lost 4-2 to, Carlota Saganda and, Lynn Grant. And, so that's where things stand. I agree. I think, you know, it'd be nice if somehow now that both of these competitions, Ryder Cup and Solheim Cup, are being played in the same year, I'd love to see. I liked it the year they had the U.S. Open, the U.S. Women's Open, and back-to-back weeks, both at Pinehurst, was it? I think a few years ago. I just think that's, you know, that's a great way to do it. It's, you know, it I think that would introduce, especially when U.S. plays on foreign soil, it would introduce us to the course a week early for the Ryder Cup. And, you know, I just think, you know, there's a lot of, you see, like, you know, from the likes of Bubba Watson to Tony Finau, you know, they've got this, they're, you know, kind of reinventing the old JCPenney Classic later this year. The Grant Thornton Invitational is going to be an LPGA USGA thing. I'm sorry, LPGA PGA Tour thing where, you know, you've got, you know, I think 16 teams of men and women playing. You know, I think there's a lot that both tours can build off of, you know, working with each other. And, but you know, for now, we'll take the Solheim Cup this weekend. And, it's part of, a busy weekend, in professional golf. The other thing going on, two things going on. Let's go with the, PGA Tour Champions out at Pebble Beach for the Pure Insurance Championship, where the PGA Tour Champions golfers get paired with a first tee golfer from around the country and then a couple of amateurs. Jerry Kelly in the opening round here on Friday when we're recording Talking.Golf this week, a 4-under par 68, Mario Tiziani a 1-under 71. Jerry Kelly now tied for first. I didn't see this before we went on. So somebody, Arjun Atwal, fell back, must have bogeyed his last hole. And so Jerry Kelly tied for the lead, Mario Tiziani T20. And they are the two Wisconsin regulars that are out there playing this week. Steve Stricker had entered, withdrew on Monday. But, again, we saw some signs out of Jerry Kelly last week that his game was coming around, especially in that final round. And he's come out firing here. He played Spyglass Hill, as did Mario today, and then they'll go to Pebble Beach tomorrow.
Yeah, Jerry hasn't won in a while. He's due, Rob. He's had a little bit of an up-and-down year. Good to see him shoot. I see he's tied with four other guys, it looks like, including Vijay, Steven Alker, who's going to be tough, I think, down the stretch. But yeah, good to see Jerry get a good one here.
You know, Jerry Kelly, you know, has won every year he's been on the PGA Tour Champions, but doesn't have a win this year. I know that his fellow Madison golfer, Steve Stricker, is kind of hoarding them, since we last did a Talking.Golf and another win for Stricker, but, let's talk about Jerry for a second. I mean, you know that it's got to be in, you know, on his mind that, you know, he hasn't gotten a W this year. And again, he's not, you know, he's still number 10 in the Charles Schwab Cup standings, so he's had a pretty solid year by most standards, but I think Jerry is a guy who's in it to win it.
Yeah, he holds himself to a very high standard, and if he doesn't win a couple times a year, I think he considers it a bad year, Rob. And he's had so much success on this tour. So, these guys aren't getting any younger. I'm sure it's a little harder every year. You know, Steve Stricker has talked about it quite often this year that it's harder for him to work on keeping his speed up with his driver and, you know, staying in shape. And it just gets a little harder every year. And not that Jerry's old by any means, but, you know, 56, he'll be 57 here in a few weeks, I think, right? I think he's got November birth.
About 2 months from tomorrow, he'll turn. Okay. He'll turn 57 in 2 weeks or 2 months. And I was going to ask you about that. I mean, that's something that we're going to start writing about is, you know, how, you know, what are they doing differently to try to, you know, not cheat Father Time, but maybe work together with Father Time. I think, you know, the fact that Bernhard Langer won the U.S. Senior Open this year in his 60s, gives these guys, you know, kind of that blueprint. You know, we've heard Steve Stricker talk often about, juggling family. And, you know, we've talked about it, you know, in the last few talking.golfs between Nikki, you know, qualifying for the U.S. Senior Women's Amateur, Izzy, who we'll talk about in a few minutes, continuing to do great things on the golf course, as the defending state high school champ. And then Bobby, you know, trying to get, bounce back from her, falling short at the, first stage of LPGA Tour Q School, but, you know, still being a someone who's got tremendous potential for someone who's played the game so short. There's a lot going on in his family, and he's done a wonderful job of balancing that and picking his spots. And then he, you know, shows up last week at Sanford and goes out and plays a great final round, final nine holes, really, and is able to get his sixth win of the year. Is that correct?
That's right. Six wins. What's the amazing stat, Rob, is he's made 15 starts, and he's finished first or second 11 times. That just blows me away. They're all top tens, and I think, you know, he's got a tie for eighth maybe as his worst finish, but 11, one or first or second finishes out of 15 starts is, I mean, that's, you're talking about Tiger in his prime did that kind of thing. This is a different tour, but just amazing.
Yeah, and, you think, boy, you know, it can't be that hard. And then you look at leaderboards this year especially, and you know, to me, Gary, one of the, perhaps, you know, storylines that hasn't been talked about much on the PGA Tour champions is the great inconsistency in a lot of these guys. You know, Alex Chayka, I think I'm seeing here, you know, even par through five holes today at Pebble Beach. And, Stephen Elker had a dynamite year last year, but, he's been fairly quiet this year. Ernie Els, you know, puts himself in position maybe a half dozen times a year and then finds a way not to win a PGA Tour Champions event, or not as many as he should. Boo Weekly is the latest guy to come out and play. And he's, I think, finding, much like David Duval and Nota Begay III, you just don't show up and collect trophies on this tour. You really have to grind and work at it. And, what we're seeing out of the Wisconsin contingent is pretty impressive. It'd be great to see Mario Tiziani here down the stretch. He played well at Pebble Beach last year, and he comes in this year 55 on the Schwab Cup standings. I think that'll be good enough to get him in the first playoff event. But, he needs to finish, in that top 40 in order to skip Q school this year. And it's going to require a couple of really good finishes.
Yeah, you touched on something a little bit ago, Rob, with, guys get on little heaters on this tour, on every tour, but on the Champions Tour, you're right, Elker was hot for a while. He was Player of the Year last year. And then they kind of fade a little bit, which makes what Bernhard Langer and Stricker and Kelly, too, what they've done year after year, winning tournaments, being in contention, especially Langer. But, got to start talking about Steve and Jerry in that sense, too. They're 6 years younger than Bernhard, but they've played very well now for 6 years on this tour.
So we'll continue to follow that here through the weekend out at the Monterey Peninsula in the Pure Insurance Championship. Across the pond, some good stuff happening this week. And we apologize for not getting the daily results up, but it seemed like whenever I was looking at the DP World Tour qualifying school results, Gary, they were always in progress. They never finished before I would, you know, start and end a work shift. And they'll be going up here soon because in the event at Newbury, England, the site there, Thomas Longbella bounced back from a tough opening round 74 on the Donington Grove Golf Club course with rounds of 69, 67, and 71. And he finishes that qualifier T9. 20 golfers advance to the second stage, and he becomes the second one. We had, who was it last week? Not Sam Anderson, but Kaylor Steeger, I believe, got through on the number in his DP Q School effort. And we're not sure where this will lead for these guys because they've got first stage of PGA Tour qualifying coming up. But, well, we've seen some really good stuff out of Thomas Longbella, and that's a pretty good round of golf or a pretty good stretch of golf to go overseas where he probably doesn't have a ton of experience and get through a DP Tour first stage qualifier.
When is the second stage, Rob? Do those guys just stay over there for the second stage, or they come back home for a week and go back for a week? Well, I would think it would be awfully tough financially to have to stay there for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks.
The second stage isn't until the first week of November. And again, and interestingly, now the second stage and the final stage are on back-to-back weeks, all in Spain, four different sites, November 2nd through 5th. And so I'm not sure how that lines up against the PGA Tour qualifying Q School, but you would, you know, and again, you look at the TV screen, you know, on this Korn Ferry Tour tournament that's going on at the Scarlet Course in Ohio, and you know, there's ways to get to the PGA Tour through the DP World Tour, and I, you know, I've been fascinated by that, and so I don't know how these young guys are getting the advice that they need to make those decisions. And really, to answer your scheduling question, you know, how do you make it all work? That's not easy, is it?
It's not easy. And we're talking about guys who aren't making a ton of money at this point in their careers, and you're traveling to Europe. It's not cheap over there, Rob. And then you're coming home and you're paying entry fees into these, into the Q schools, which are not inexpensive too. So these guys are burning through a lot of money, and we talk about it all the time, how tough it is to make a living, and they're living proof for sure.
There were three more pre-qualifying sites this week, none of them involving Wisconsin golfers from what I could tell, and then there's one more next week. First stage of PGA Tour qualifying schools, October 10th through the 13th at four sites, another batch the 17th through the 20th, and a final batch the 24th through the 27th. So Gary, to answer your question, they're able to wedge the second stage of DP World Tour qualifying and the final stage all between the first and second stage of the PGA Tour qualifying school, which will have its second stage only at three sites, one in Georgia, one in Florida, and one in Alabama, and November 14th through the 17th, and then a couple more on November 28th through December 1st. The final stage of Q School, and it'll be televised this year, December 14th through the 17th at TPC Sawgrass, the Valley Course, and at Sawgrass Country Club at Pontevedra Beach, and that's December 14th through the 17th. So, I mean, theoretically, Gary, these guys could be playing a lot of golf over, you know, the next few months, all trying to get somewhere, I guess, what, better than they were this year, someplace that has more of a future in their minds than they were this year.
Yeah, there's rungs on the ladder, and they're trying to get up on that next rung. And you get to the top rung, you're on the PGA Tour, but there's some rungs below that, and every one is a stepping stone. Every one is a step up. So, you know, we've been saying it. I've been saying it for a long time. These guys are all talented enough to get through. It's just a matter of having your best game on the right week, basically. And if you do, you advance, and if you don't, you don't. It's a meritocracy. It's tough. It's a tough way to make a living, but all these guys are capable of getting there.
Also going on this week has been a lot of high school golf. It was conference championship week around the state. A couple people I wanted to highlight, though, Gary, are, you know, one's very familiar to us, one's not. I'll start with the one who's not. Had a chance to, I got a Facebook message from one of our golf writing colleagues, Mike Duplays, up in the Green Bay area, making sure I'm aware of a young lady out of Green Bay Preble Co-op. She actually goes to Green Bay Southwest High School, but Emma Cunningham. You know, we covered a lot of talented incoming freshmen this summer, you know, between, you know, Abby Hendrickson at DeForest. Abigail, she went by during the summer. She's kind of somewhat changed her name. She's going a little more casual here during the high school season. So sometimes Abigail, sometimes Abby. She's done great stuff over at DeForest and finished fourth at the Badger Large Conference. And McKenna Nelson out of Beaver Dam was a runner-up in that tournament this week. We'll talk more about that in a second. But Emma Cunningham is at is with the Green Bay Preble Co-op, and she shot a 70, Gary, in winning the Fox River Classic Conference, helped Green Bay Preble finish a close second to now, I believe, a 6- or 7-time champion Bayport, which has really had a great run up there in the Green Bay area. But what stands out is they play that conference championship at Wander Springs Golf Course in Greenleaf. It's on my bucket list of courses to play simply because every time they host a conference championship, whether it's the boys or the girls, the scores in those tournaments, Gary, are always significantly higher than they are for those golfers, you know, looking at individual golfers, looking at those teams during the course of the regular season. Emma Cunningham goes out and shoots, I believe it was a 200 par 70 there on that was Thursday. And my goodness, that was she had an eagle on the par 5 ninth hole. She had three other birdies to offset three bogeys. And, you know, she kind of got overshadowed by some of the other talented freshmen coming in this year. But that's a heck of a score. I can't remember someone breaking par at Wander Springs in a conference championship at the high school level. And this young lady comes in and does it as a freshman. Pretty cool stuff. Looking forward to seeing her, you know, and now we get to the point there with regional, sectional, state coming up in the next 3 weeks, you know, all stuff that's different for McKenna Nelson and Abby Hendrickson. And now, you know, add Emma Cunningham's name to the list. Zoe Grinowitz down at Divine Savior Holy Angels. They won their conference championship this week. And then Camille DeLos down at Wisconsin Central is another part of that freshman class. I mean, there's going to be, between the returning talent and then this new talent, it's going to be a fun postseason here in girls golf. But a freshman shooting a 200 par 70 on a course that never, ever produces those kind of scores, to me, was probably one of the highlights of conference championship week.
That's amazing. That's incredible, Rob. Did she win by several strokes or?
Seven shots, 77, couple gals, tied for second there. And that was, you know, again, that's good playing at any course, but, especially at Wander Springs. And, I believe, one of them was Peyton Dudra, a sophomore from Bayport. Her sister Avery kind of, was part of that group that started things, over at Bayport in terms of their recent run. And then Adeline Johnson, who's a senior, she's headed to Nebraska, Omaha, next year to play college golf. She also shot 77. Riley Wood of, the Preble Co-op, shot 78 and, led a group of girls tied for fourth. So, you know, a few sub 80 rounds there, which was pretty cool, but, you know, 70 wins by seven there. Somewhat, a different story, in that, the Badger Large played at Watertown Country Club. And, you know how tough that course can be. And so McKenna Nelson shot her 71 there, tied for second with Jordan Shipshock out of Wanakee, who just recently committed to UW Green Bay. And then Abigail Hendrickson with a 75. But Izzy Stricker comes out and wins that one. You know, she shot the 65 at Pleasant View to win the Middleton invite. I think that was what we talked about last time. And then I'm not sure we got a chance to talk about that. Mike Duplays reached out because Emma Cunningham shot 68. At Oneida Golf and Riding to win the Notre Dame Invitational, same day that Izzy Stricker shoots 67. So Emma shoots 68, defending state champion shoots 67, And then Izzy Stricker, who's supposed to be winning conference and regionals and sectionals because she is the defending state champion. She goes out and takes care of business at the, at Watertown Country Club. She shoots a, even par 70, two under par 34 on the front, and then a two over 38 on the back. Again, can, you know, let's talk about Izzy Stricker for a minute, Gary. I mean, with all that's going on in their family this year, you know, in terms of great success on the golf course, starting with dad, mom going to the U.S. Women's Amateur, Bobby's played really well, you know, trying, you know, her first professional year, full year at, on the Symetra Tour or Epson Tour. I mean, now Izzy's got to do it. I think Izzy's as good at doing that because she's got such a great mind for golf. I don't think she gets rattled very easily. Do you get that sense?
I do get that sense. You know, she's mature beyond her years. She's grown up in that golf culture, and that, you know, that, that helps so much being around the good, great golf she's seen, you know, for years and years now. She has the access to the best instruction, the best equipment, the best courses, but still, all that said, you got to go out and shoot numbers, and she's done it. So all credit to her to shoot 65 and 67 and break 70. In high school at any level, but in, especially in high school and high school girls, is really good. And I was talking to Dennis, her grandfather a couple months ago, and he said she's got that it. She's got that competitive, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Whatever side of person that, you know, you can go out and, you know, push everything aside and focus and concentrate and shoot a number. She's got that. She's got that ability. So definitely we'll be watching her as the years go by here.
The other one that, that has apparently that it this year is Kylie Walker down at Wascosa Central. She and her sister Kate are going over to play college golf at Ferris State next year. She shot a 71 down at Rivermark Country Club in Waterford, and she won her third, I believe it's her third Southern Lakes Conference title by 9 shots over Sarah Ramsden at a Beloit Memorial. Sarah came over from the Big 8 Conference when Beloit switched this year as part of a kind of an overall conference realignment. Sarah had finished second in the Big 8 the last couple years, but Kylie Walker, another gal who's got that it. Now, Gary, we switch from, you know, from the conference championships. We still have one more conference championship up north, the Middle Border with Prescott, the three-time defending Division II champion. They'll play that on Monday. There'll be two regionals on Monday, a bunch of others on Tuesday and Wednesday. But, you know, you can tell – the key for all these young ladies is being able to treat what's ahead of them like a normal golf tournament. How you've covered, you know, golfers at all levels. To you in general, what allows the good ones to do that?
Boy, that's a million-dollar question. I mean, that's a question that every golf coach and every parent and everyone involved in golf looks for answers for, on that, Rob. It's, you know, it's mental, obviously. It's something between your ears that allows you to go out and do that. And I know Wascosa has had just a great year. They played in that big tournament in Illinois that they didn't win, but otherwise I think they've won everything, right? With the
everything
Walkers leading.
They lost to, I believe it was Wanakee at the Janesville Invitational. And that was also last weekend. Mark Olson, you know, just said too many big numbers. And I went back and looked at the scorecards and I think they counted. Was it 4 doubles, a triple, and an other? One of the young ladies struggled on, I think it was the second hole at Riverside. But, you know, I mean, they're high school kids. They're bound, and better to have it happen at the Janesville Invitational than at a sectional, you know, or a regional, you know, where it could, you know, determine whether you go on or not. But, yeah, I mean, and you're right. I mean, that is the million-dollar question. What do you do? I mean, is it swagger? I mean, how much swagger is good to have, especially at this age? How much is it just, you know, maybe having that last lesson with your instructor? I mean, I talked to a college coach this week and about, you know, some of the kids that we've seen over the years, and sometimes they get too tethered to their instructor, and if something goes wrong, they can't self-correct. I think the ones that have a little bit of swagger, in other words, confidence, fundamentally they are comfortable with where they're at in their golf swing and their golf season, and but then I think, you know, Gary, the big one is when the going gets tough and you can't just call a timeout and bring your instructor in to fix a swing deal, you know, what can you do to self-correct? I think that ultimately is going to determine success here the next 3 weeks for these high school golfers.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head, Rob. Self-belief is so important. If you don't have that, it's hard to perform. It's hard to perform at a high level when the pressure's on. You have to have belief in yourself that you're going to be able to shoot numbers, to make pars, to beat the field, whatever it is, however you approach golf. You have to have that belief in yourself to be able to do that. Otherwise, you know, if you don't believe in yourself, you know, nobody does. And, so all these young ladies and the boys shooting these good numbers, every one of them really believes in what they're doing.
So we'll, have the, previews of the, regionals, on Sunday and Monday. Again, the first couple of, regionals we played Monday, and then, Tuesday, Wednesday is the bulk of the regionals around the state. Division two going to three regionals under each of the three sectionals this year. A little bit of a departure from the two. They started getting too many teams at all these sites in Division two. So they're kind of spreading those out, but, still two teams and the top four teams, top three individuals not on those teams advance to this. We want to remind you that Talking.Golf, sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf, our friends at Old Fashioned Golf, they're creating Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay. All of their gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for the great state of Wisconsin, both on and off the golf course. You can check out all of the things they have to offer at Old Fashioned Golf at their website, oldfashionedgolf.com. Gary, I wanted to wrap up Talking.Golf with really the big talker of a story that you wrote this week. We teased it last week on Talking.Golf, the proposed renovation to Whitnall Park Golf Course, which, again, your story was fascinating on many different levels. I never in a million years would have picked Whitnall Park and Greenfield Park to be the two busiest courses in the Milwaukee County Park System golf course portfolio, but that is the case, and that's one reason why they're looking quite seriously at renovating Whitnall Park and addressing some concerns that are there now, but also really making that golf course viable for the long-term future.
That's right, Rob. Yeah, Whitnall Park, the irrigation system is failing there, and it's become sort of a mini disaster where they're going out and fixing heads and leaks all the time. So they have to do the irrigation. And as long as they're going to do the irrigation, they want to do some other things to bring the course sort of up to modernize the course. Or there's some pinch points where there's pace of play issues because greens are close to tees and that sort of thing. And then, you know, the bunkers have been a problem. They haven't been addressed for 40 or 50 years. And you know how bunkers are after, if you ignore them for that long. They want to put a cart path in, and most importantly, I think they want to put a range in there. There's no practice range, no facility there. And so they can't have clinics and junior golf programs and all that kind of stuff because there's nowhere to practice. So I think putting a range in and a chipping green and an expansive practice facility and sort of modernizing that course is going to be, it already is, as you mentioned, the most played course in the system. And I think these changes are going to make it much better. However, the drawback is that it's going to have to close for a year to a little more than a year. And so where do you put all those people who are playing 40,000 rounds on that course? That's going to be the challenge for Milwaukee County.
I've only played Whitnall Park once. I've played Oakwood Park maybe once. They're mm-hmm. kind of close in proximity. They're a little ways away from both interstates, all the interstates that feed into Milwaukee. So, but not far from Highway 45. So as you look at it, Gary, what are the pros and cons to doing what they want to do at this golf course? And where do you see, this has to go to a vote of the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors. Is that right? And what in your mind is going to tilt the scales, you know, yes or no for those people?
Yeah, it's a big chunk of change, Rob, $8.3 million to do everything they want to do there. You know, there's a chance that the County Board of Supervisors in November, they're going to meet and vote on this. They could ask, they could come back to the parks and say, let's scale it back. Let's try to get it down to $5 or $6 million. And in that case, you know, the golf course architects who are working on this project, Todd Quitnell with Quitnell Golf Designs and Mike Benkuski, have partnered on this, they would have to go over the routing and make some changes. Or, you know, they could table this for a year or two, in which case, you know, Whitnall's only going to get worse as far as the irrigation system. So You know, John Canavan, the turf manager for Milwaukee County Parks, has made a presentation to the supervisors, and now it's up to them to vote on it.
Where does the money come from if this goes through?
For the cart path, they already have the funds from the American Recovery Plan Act. They already have those funds, $1.1 million for the cart path. The rest of it would come from capital bonding, and I'm not sure if they pull money out of the general fund for some of this too, but I think it'd be mostly capital bonding. So it's a big ask. But like John Canavan said at this open house meeting that I attended, they're looking at, 20, 30 and 40 years down the road. And if they don't fix some of these things, the course is only going to get worse. And so as long as they're doing this, let's do it right. And let's have a golf course that's really viable for the next 40 or 50 years.
I was shocked, this driving range concept, for a course that doesn't have one. You know, we kind of take it for granted. A lot of them are afterthoughts at a lot of courses. Brown Deer Park, according to your story, and from the people who spoke at the meeting, has generated $50,000 in revenue so far this year. One thing I've noticed when I'm at Brown Deer Park for the WPGA Junior is that even while that tournament's going on, there's a lot of people either on their lunch hours. You know, the neat thing about the county park system is it's a place for people to go to, you know, kind of clear their heads. You can play disc golf. You can have a picnic. You can have, they've got those, roving, beer nights with the, basically a beer food cart type concept. But the driving range is always busy. And it's actually, and again, it's the same driving range they use for the GMO. And, you're hitting towards a fence that John Daly was probably hitting over. And, yeah. And the putting green is mammoth. And then they've got a chipping, they still have the chipping area and the sand trap area that you can work. It's a great facility. And $50,000 is really nothing to sneeze at when you're basically just dispensing range balls and allowing people to come out and kind of get a taste of Brown Deer Park. And most of those people come back and play the course. Apparently, according to Jack Schultz, we talked to at the State Am and the State Open, because it's been hard for the state amateur champion to even get on the course.
Yeah, and that's, speaking of Jack, that's our friend Jack. That's Brown Deer Park is where he does, a bulk of his practicing on that practice and chipping green on the range. And if you look at where Whitnall Park is located, really outside of the practice station in New Berlin, there aren't too many driving ranges in that immediate vicinity, so places to practice. So I think it's a no-brainer if they can get the money to put a range in there. It's already the busiest course in the system, so you would imagine that range would get heavy use, and it's going to be built on what is now the first hole, so they're going to have to do some rerouting of some of the other holes. But as long as they're going to do this project, if I had a vote, I'd say do it right, spend the money now, and have a product that's going to stand up for you in the next 3, 4, 5 decades.
In your mind, Gary, is it more needed there than any other place in the county? I mean, they've always had the tier system. The gold course has been Brown Deer. I think Dretzka and Oakwood have been silver courses. And has Whitnall been in that grouping too?
Yes, and it will remain in that grouping. And someone at this informational meeting, someone asked if the greens fees would go up, and John Canavan said it will stay a silver course, so the greens fees will be the same as what they are at Dretzka. So, green fees are probably going to go up a little bit in the coming years. I think we all see that coming, but it's going to be, those courses are affordable. And there's a very, very avid and dedicated golf clientele, especially at Whitnall. There's a men's league there that's been, Gene Haas was at this meeting, Robin. He told me he started the men's club in 1956. So wow. It's almost 70 years old, the men's club there. And a lot of those guys have played that course for a long time.
Well, I remember Brent Wong and is it Jim Ignatowski? I think came through there for a time.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these guys will go from club to club, but I mean, that was one. And then the time that I played there, it's got a charm to it, doesn't it? I mean, it's kind of like, it's got a little bit of Brown Deer. It's got a little bit of Dretzka. I'm sure on that side of town, it's got to be one that, a lot of people see as their local course. They're Odana Hills. If you're in Madison, you're to a degree Brown County and Green Bay. It's something that, I've always thought it was better than Oakwood, but then Oakwood started getting better. And I think Oakwood was kind of like Yahara Hills in Madison, where maybe it was, to a lot of people, was always younger and less mature than a Brown Deer Dretzka or Whitnall Park. But I mean, that's coming to its own too. How would you compare, I guess, because they're relatively close, you know, I mean, Whitnall Park and Oakwood Park. How do you see the purpose of those two courses and what would separate then? Obviously then Whitnall Park would become a magnet for practicing and playing, right?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question, Rob. You know, Whitnall Park's a lot older, so it's more of a classic old style course. It was designed by George Hansen, the landscape architect for Milwaukee County Parks back in the, you know, 100 years ago, who designed, you know, four or five of the county courses. And, so it's, you know, heavily treed, and I think they're going to take out quite a few trees. Oakwood is not as mature, but, a little more wide open, longer. So I would say Oakwood is more of sort of a modern course. Cause I think Oakwood opened maybe, I'm going to guess around 1970. I could be off by a couple years there, but Whitnall's, more of a, what would you consider maybe a golden age classic tree lined course, parkland type course?
Well, in 1932 for Whitnall Park, I mean, that's a great history there.
Yeah. 91 years old, you know, going on 100 years old. It's an old course, and you know, courses, you know, they need updates. They're living things. They're living, breathing animals, and they need, you know, you've got to take care of your courses. You've got to take care of the irrigation, or things get bad, and then you find yourself with problems, and golfers start complaining about the condition of the course and all that stuff. So Whitnall's not to that point yet, but I think if they would let it go a couple more years with the irrigation being what it is, they'll start having some major problems there. So time to address it, I think.
Well, it was, again, fascinating for me to read this, and the story's still up on Wisconsin.golf about the proposed changes to Whitnall Park. But really fascinating for me, Gary, because it was an idea that started with an irrigation system, and then people who, you know, and this is what's neat about golf these days. I mean, everyone's looking at this because it's hard to, you know, invest in a golf course if it's just for one thing. A lot of people see a bigger picture now that maybe they didn't see a generation ago, in as far as we were building golf courses, we weren't necessarily renovating them. The course where we live here in Arizona, one of the three courses has been shut down all summer. Oliphant Golf out of Wisconsin came in with the initial plan to redo the greens as they did for another the three courses here 3 years ago. And then it morphed into, because of all the water issues in the Southwest United States, they want to find a way that they don't have to overseed the fairways, and they want to reduce their water footprint, and you know, for that reason. And so they also redid the fairways, and they're planting grass that the golf course not to have to overseed that course. They haven't done that with the other course. It'll be great to see if this will work or not. But they invested an entire summer, which, again, summer here, a lot different. It'd be like, you know, if you could renovate courses in the winter in Wisconsin, obviously yeah, that's when you do it. But there still aren't enough people to fill the two other courses this time of year. So it's all worked out well. However, the one thing to caution about is, every project like that, you know, has a timetable, but not all timetables are met. And I think that's going to be really the, you know, here the fairways aren't growing in as well. And we've had, you know, drought like conditions and 110 degree weather for the longest time. And so the fairway grasses haven't grown in nearly as well as the tee boxes look immaculate. Look like Century World after the, before the U.S. Senior Open, when they hadn't been open since the previous year. And the greens, I'm sure, will be a little bit young. It'll be firm for a while, for a couple of years, like the other course. But, you know, my concern is that, you know, okay, we're going to shut it down for a year at Whitnall Park. And then, you know, hopefully you really have to cross your fingers and, you know, say a prayer and that there aren't any, you know, setbacks. And that's the part that the golfers are not a patient group, are they, Gary? And, they're going to have to be patient if this gets approved at Whitnall Park.
Yeah, I think that 1 year is sort of a pie in the sky, Rob, because if it gets approved in full in its entirety by the Board of Supervisors this fall, they would right after the course closes next fall in 2024, they would start construction, continue to all through 2025, and they would plan to open the course in late spring, maybe early summer in 2026. But, you know, grass has to grow in, and if there's a bad spring or a tough winter, you know, I think that's really ambitious, but hopefully they wouldn't open too soon. But there's going to be a lot of pressure because, you know, 40,000 rounds at Whitnall, all those guys are going to have to go, and ladies are going to have to go somewhere else to play, and they're going to want to get back on their golf course. So
yeah,
let's hope if this goes through that the weather is kind to them and that they can get the grass growing and get them on there in 2026.
And did I read correctly, Greenfield Park did something similar as far as the irrigation is concerned. And we mentioned earlier, Greenfield is now number two in rounds played behind Whitnall in as far as Milwaukee County courses. Have you played Greenfield Park? Did that create, a better, I would assume it created a better playing condition for a park that, you know, I don't think it's quite as long or maybe as the, I fancy Greenfield kind of, I played Curry. I feel they're kind of in that same cluster of courses there.
Yeah, Greenfield, that project turned out fantastic, Rob. It really turned out well, and that's why it's getting so much plays, because people are enjoying that golf course so much. It's they closed it in nine holes at a time to do the irrigation. But in this case at Whitnall, they would have to close the entire course because they have to reroute some holes. They didn't really have, they moved a few tees to get them away from at Greenfield to get some of the clustering spread out a little bit, but they really didn't have to reroute the golf course like they would have to do at Whitnall. And right now I played Nagawaki in Waukesha County this morning, Robin. They're doing their irrigation right now. And a couple times this summer they've closed one hole maybe, but mostly you've been able to play the entire course, and there's workers all over it putting the irrigation in. And, you know, a couple, they've put a few tees up, like on one of the par fives, they turned it into a par four, but you were able to play the course all summer. That won't be the case at Whitnall.
Well, it'll be interesting. And, I tell you, it's great to see, money, you know, it, again, you know, seeing the amount of money that these courses are generating. And, you know, when I was back this summer, you've seen it. I mean, you're playing Nagawaki at the crack of dawn, aren't you? I mean, it's, you know, yeah, you're going early to be able to get and play at your pace. And, it's nice to see that the windfall from golf coming out of COVID is going back into courses. And, I was really, again, a great job in really the detail with which you describe what they're trying to do at Whitnall. I hope, again, you know, county courses have answer to a board of supervisors that oversee the entire Milwaukee County park system. Much like right, the situation in Madison, where, you know, we keep hearing that Yahara Hills is going to close, but they keep doing so well, they stay open. I mean, it's really been a fascinating time, and as far as golf course architecture, the building, the rebuilding, the renovating, it's just it's pretty cool. So we'll see what happens there. Gary, any plans for the weekend here?
No big plans, Rob. I'm playing in an outing on Monday, and then I'm on vacation next week, Rob. So, I'll be coming to you if we do our podcast next Friday. I'll be coming to you from, let's see, where will I be Friday? I'm going up to Mackinac Island. I think Friday I'll be back in Stevens Point. I'm staying at the Inn at Stevens, at Century World, Rob. So if we do a podcast next Friday, I'll be coming to you from, Stevens Point.
Well, it's gonna be big pressure on the Inn at Century World because yeah. Yeah. We're counting on that Wi-Fi to be as good as the Osseo Inn a couple weeks ago. So that'll be big. Right. And I can't wait to hear about Mackinac Island. I've been up there with our family. I saw you posted on Facebook looking for feedback about the golf course there. It looks amazing from the restaurant up. We ate on a patio restaurant up there at the hotel, not the hotel, I don't think it was. It was a building high above the golf course, watching the golfers play. We biked around the island. We like that. And, but you're going to play golf up on Mackinac Island. I can't wait to hear about this.
Now, Rob, is it Mackinac or Mackinac? Please give me the, I don't want to mispronounce it when I get there and have the locals look at me funny.
I've always heard Mackinac. And, and even though, one side, like Mackinac City went and got Mackinac or the spelling, it should be what you said.
Yeah. But
everyone says, I've always heard Mackinac, the Mackinac Island Bridge. And then, okay. You know, I think the city on the, my daughter's telling me it's a Mackinac is the Native American version of Mackinac, but it's pronounced Mackinac. And, they actually took the C and made it a W I guess it would be the lower peninsula side of the bridge. And so trying to help promote that. I think it's Mackinac. You asked. Okay. We'll answer that question next week when you talk to somebody who knows far better than me. We've always referred to it as Mackinac. And then so you're taking the bridge over to the UP and then driving down to see
going around the UP. We're staying in St. Ignace the night before. And then, early on Wednesday morning, we're getting up and taking the ferry over to Mackinac, and, spending 3 days there. So, we're looking forward to it. And I get to play the golf course. I've talked to the golf professional at Wawashkama Golf Course. I don't know how it's pronounced, Rob. Again, I'll find out all these pronunciations for next week. All right.
That'd be great. No, it sounds like a wonderful time. Well-deserved time. You've been a busy guy here as we kind of wrap up the tournament golf season. And we look forward to hearing about that next week. Meanwhile, it's a good time for Gary to be gone because it'll be a lot of regional golf, all week next week. And then the, regional report card leading into the sectional preview and the sectional report card. So it's going to be, rinse, wash, and repeat for, high school golf coverage here on Wisconsin.golf. But, my goodness, it's been, you see the bold face, on our website. We might need to change that because we don't like bold face headlines, but, the schedule results slug, is getting a lot of wear and tear because that's where all the results have been, kind of compiled. And, it shows that, we've got, a lot of interest in the high school scene. So we're going to let Gary kick his, feet up, and enjoy, life on the island. We'll hear about that next week and, we'll look forward to your report. Gary, appreciate the time this week, and enjoy your weekend.
All right. Good luck the next couple of weeks, Rob. Drink a lot of coffee.
Will do. Will do. For Gary D'Amato, this is Rob Hernandez. You've been listening to Talking.Golf, and Talking.Golf has been sponsored by Old Fashioned Golf. Old Fashioned Golf, our friends at Old Fashioned Golf have created Wisconsin-inspired golf apparel right in Green Bay, Wisconsin. All their golf gear is extremely comfortable with one-of-a-kind designs that allow you to show your love for this great state, both on and off the course. And take it from me, Rob Hernandez, and Gary D'Amato. When we wear our old-fashioned golf polos on the golf course or out to dinner, nobody has to ask us where we're from or where we like playing our golf. It's all about Wisconsin at Old Fashioned Golf, so check them out at oldfashionedgolf.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.